Hey there, everybody. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Time for News Dissector Radio, the News Dissector Radio Hour, every week at this time on PRN-FM. I'm in the studio with Polarity One, Polar Levine. Say hello.
Howdy do.
And he's here as well. And we're going to be talking about what everybody's talking about this past week, the spying and surveillance scandal, the mounting power of U.S. executive agencies and the whole question of national security. We have with us two people who are really quite knowledgeable, who can talk to us about all of this. One is Fred Branfman. Noam Chomsky said of Fred Branfman that he worked for years with enormous courage and of effort to try to expose what was called the secret wars against Laos and Cambodia during the Vietnam War. The secret wars were perfectly public wars, which the media were keeping secret, with the complicity of government, and Fred finally did succeed in breaking through. Well, he's been monitoring what's happening today, and we're going to be talking with him. He's in Budapest, Hungary, and he'll be joining us in a minute or two. Also, in upstate New York, in the greater Woodstock metropolitan area, Jeff Cohn, one of the founders of FAIR and professor at Ithaca College and part of the Roots Action group that's mobilizing support for the world's most famous current whistleblower. So we're going to hear more from all of them in a minute. But first, this tune.
First thing when I wake up, right before I close my eyes at night, I think, sense, feel, man, like I'm under some kind of microscope. Satellites over my head, transmitters in my dollars, hawking, watching, scoping, shocking, scrutinizing me, checking to see what I'm doing, where I be, who I see, how and where and with whom I make my money. What is this?
Scott, watching me, one of the great neo-soul singers.
And a performer as well.
And a performer as
and
well.
And an actress on HBO. And a song which is about
watching me, being watched.
And that's what our show is about. So hence the song, to, you know, sophisticated, in a sophisticated way to fit in.
And I picked it out specifically, you know, and you notice that it's related
it perfectly
to the concept.
Brilliant, a brilliant conceptual breakthrough by Polarity One here.
This show, I think, is groundbreaking in that way, in that the music, you know, relates subtly to, it's extraordinary.
It's amazing, everybody. It's definitely potential Nobel Prize winning
material. It's progressive. It's
at any rate,
progressive.
Let's go to a progressive who has been helping us understand the work of the secret government, the people in the shadows for many, many years, going back to the Vietnam War, where he, like a dog in a bone, really followed the story of what happened to Laos and Cambodia and brought out documents and information that were being muzzled and buried. Fred Branfman is with us in Budapest. What you doing there, Fred?
Well, I fell in love with a Hungarian woman, and she wants to live here, so here I am.
Well, one thing can be said, and I will be the one to say it. It is a beautiful city. Both, it's broken into two halves, Buda and Pest. And I have to say that it's remarkable architecture, beautiful vibe, great people. And you're among them, so that's cool. So, Fred, you've been monitoring what's been happening here in the last week with Mr. Snowden, this whole story, how it has emerged. Give us your take on it, how it hit you as somebody who's been familiar with the activities of the National Security Agency, et cetera, for all these years.
Well, I think there are two basic issues. The narrow question, I've just been following today various members of Congress, even Dianne Feinstein, who accused Mr. Snowden of treason, has said she wants to hold public, or actually classify hearings. Other people are calling for public hearings. I just heard a University of Chicago professor saying we really did need to look into this and so forth and so on. I think it's important to remember that none of this would have been happening without Edward Snowden Snowden's courage. If he had not revealed this information, this entire program, this spying on the American people would still be secret. Members of Congress would still be facing jail if they tried to tell their own constituents about it. And it's quite clear, in my opinion, that on this question of spying, Edward Snowden has done the world a great service, and he should be honored, not threatened.
So we have.
I
just wanted to jump in on this one point here because, you know, we have a complicit media, which we're going to get to when when Jeff Cohen joins us. But the complicit Congress, okay, Nancy Pelosi has now spoken out calling for Snowden's prosecution. You can use the term persecution, but she says he must be prosecuted. And the chiefs of the House Intelligence Panel are saying that Snowden is lying. The National Security Agency in the Hill newspaper up on Congress, that covers Congress, rather. The National Security Agency is lying. A leaker is lying about both his access to information and the scope of the secret surveillance programs he uncovered, according to the heads of the House Intelligence Committee. Emerging from a hearing with NSA Director Keith Alexander, hardly a disinterested person, Representatives Mike Rogers, a Republican from Michigan, chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland, senior Democrat on the panel, said Snowden simply wasn't in the position to access the content of the communications gathered under NSA programs, as he's claimed. How I read this is that there's much more to what's going on than he actually found out. But nevertheless, they're attacking him. As are many of the pundits in our media, many of the editorial writers who are calling him a traitor and worse.
Well, look, any American, any member of Congress, any member of the media, any of these pundits who are attacking Edward Snowden are in effect saying, we don't want to know if our government is spying on us. We don't want the American people to know. Things are just fine the way they are. If the government wants to listen to all of your phone calls, fine. If the government wants to check out all of your email messages, that's fine also. And to me, this is very un-American. I mean, it violates everything that this country stands for. These people are basically calling for a totalitarian state, and I'm extremely disturbed about that. I think they should be ashamed of themselves, and I think anybody who votes for any of these people is nuts.
But they're not doing this on a moral basis. They're doing it on a very practical basis. They're claiming, alleging, without evidence so far, that this so-called monitoring of metadata or whatever terms they use to try to dampen its seriousness, they say that this is actually stopping terrorist activities in their tracks, actually cracking down, exposing bad guys who are out to do damage to our country. And they say, trust us, believe us, we have the information, we just can't reveal it to you, but it's there.
Well, the point is, you can't trust them. I mean, the anybody who has been paying any attention over the last 50 years realizes that the issue of truth or lie does not even exist within the executive branch. When an executive branch official makes a statement, the purpose, and everyone knows this, the purpose of that statement is to advance the mission of their agency. Telling the truth, lying, is not even a category of thought. The most recent example, obviously, is Clapper looking members of the director of national intelligence, looking members of Congress right in the eye and lying to them and saying that they were not monitoring Americans' phone calls. If he'd been sworn, he would have committed perjury.
It seems that all this backlash against the release of this information is broadcasting to the world how easy it is to terrify the United States of America. You know, you drop a couple of buildings, yeah. and the entire concept of freedom is upended. We're just so terrified now, and you know, who wouldn't be relieved in terrorist land to know that?
You know, I just read an article claiming that, you know, Osama bin Laden won the war, okay? Because what he was trying to do was terrorize the American people and inculcate us with all this fear and allow the government to expand its activities and overreach, which, you know, leads to the persecution and the killing of Muslims, which allows him to look like a champion. So that this is all... Yeah, go ahead. Jump in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just feel we need to back up a little bit, and let's look at the big picture here. I consider, actually, this issue of Edward Snowden and these leaks very important, but minor compared to the issue that we really need to start focusing our attention on, and that is the issue of national security. We do have a national security problem in this country, and the problem is that over the last 10 years, the executive branch officials running foreign policy for the United States have alienated hundreds and hundreds of millions of Muslims in the nuclear-armed, oil-rich Muslim world of 1.8 billion people. This is the greatest strategic catastrophe, in my opinion, in American history. They've sown a whirlwind. And the issue is, one issue is definitely provoking more attacks on the United States, what do you call it, motivating countless potential suicide bombers, whether to attack Americans, whether at home or abroad. But there's an even more serious issue, and that is that because of the war in Afghanistan, they tried to force the Pakistanis to support the war in Afghanistan. This has turned 125 million Pakistanis, according to the recent Pew poll, 135 million Pakistanis now regard the U.S. as their enemies. 80% of the people there in a country with, that has nuclear arms. In the WikiLeaks cable, Ambassador Ann Patterson said that because we're so hated in Pakistan, the Pakistani government can't cooperate with us on safeguarding their nuclear materials, even if they wanted to, or engaging in nuclear proliferation. On top of that...
So as you sow, so shall you reap, in a sense, is what you're saying here. That by ignoring the implications of our policies, by treating other people with contempt in a sense, and in fact killing many of them as collateral, so-called collateral damage, we've not only alienated people, we've turned them into active enemies.
And we've, you know, General McChrystal himself said that for every civilian we kill, we create 10 new enemies. The fact is, by any, if one did a simple rational, cost-benefit analysis, the drone strikes have killed, for example, have killed 77 known Al-Qaeda and senior Taliban leaders, and over 5,000 people whose names they don't know, who they've executed without any chance of them proving their innocence, which is a moral outrage. But even more importantly, or equally importantly, in return for killing 77 people, they've outraged tens of millions of Muslims and turned them against us. This is a national security disaster. It is the United States executive branch today which poses the greatest single threat to national security. They are not protecting us. They're endangering us. And two last points on that. Back in after 9/11, there were maybe a couple of thousand, maybe a few hundred, Al-Qaeda people in Pakistan and who had left Afghanistan. Now we're told that there are thousands more in Yemen, in Somalia, in Africa. Our own government is multiplying the number of people who want to kill us, multiplying the strength of our enemies, weakening the governments that we support. It's the most insane thing and dangerous thing that I think I've seen in my lifetime.
Now, let me just... I want to call attention to a series of articles you've written on Alternet, which offer a lot of information on this. Maybe we can get Jeff Cohn on the phone as well, if we can. Get Jeff Cohn on the phone as well, so he can join us in this conversation. But You've written, and I found this very interesting. You said many have expressed surprise that under President Obama, a constitutional law senior lecturer who promised transparency and protection for whistleblowers and respect for international law when running for office, U.S. executive branch agencies have gone quite a different direction. Let's go through these institutional expansions that have taken place under the Obama administration, because most coverage tends to focus on individuals like Snowden or individual incidents, but not the whole infrastructure of what they've created. So the first item you cite is a fleet of 7,000 drones operating from a growing number of secret bases around the world that are involved in an ever-expanding number of nations murdering thousands of human beings. So how did this happen? How did they get entranced, enchanted with all this drone warfare?
Yeah, and on top of that, even more serious, as revealed in the film Dirty Wars, they've created something called the Joint Special Operations Command, the JSOC, which consists of 75,000 people operating in 60 countries whose mission is to assassinate people. This is a unit of assassins who are going around the country in total secret, in total secrecy, assassinating people without a trial, without any giving them a chance to prove their innocence. And Jeremy Scahill in the movie demonstrates a JSOC killed the family of, in this case, a man who was on our side, and then began digging the bullets. As the man was sitting there, he began digging the bullets out of a man's dead body, his wife's dead body, to try and hide the evidence. This is what's going on now, and the point I make in my article is that we're taught back here that it's the president's fault, that everything that goes on, the executive branch is the mere tool of the president. In fact, the president is only the titular leader of these very powerful agencies that persist. The presidents come and go. The NSA, the CIA, the Pentagon continue. And, you know, the most dramatic example, the number one issue for Obama when he took office was to close down the war in Afghanistan, or at least have that option. He asked the Pentagon to give him the option. They refused to do it. They went public, actually lobbying against him. And Bob Woodward quotes Obama in the book as feeling trapped. He was trapped by these gigantic executive branch agencies. They're really running things. The president is forced to pretend because the American people, imagine if Obama got up and said, you know, these guys came to me with this prison program and with the surveillance of Americans, and I had no choice but to agree, because otherwise they would undermine me politically and I'd be thrown out of office. They'd accuse me of endangering national security. If he said that to the American people, he'd be telling the truth, but he can't say that. He has to pretend that he's the one in charge. And the basic problem in America today is as Dana Priest and Bill Arkin wrote in a book that everyone should read called Top Secret America, today we've got 2,000 separate government entities. Since 9/11, they've thrown hundreds of billions of dollars, and we now have 2,000 secret government entities, as well as thousands of corporations, all behind a screen of secrecy, surveilling Americans and murdering people abroad. And we've never had a debate in this country. Does it really make sense to attack the Muslim world this way, to turn hundreds of millions of Muslims against us? In my article, I hope everyone looks at that part of it at least, I cite 25 U.S. officials, starting with the former director of national intelligence, saying that this policy is backfiring, that our government, President Obama and the executive branch, are not protecting us, they're endangering us. And that's coming from General McChrystal and Dennis Blair, the former director of national intelligence.
So what do you think it is, as somebody who's been an observer of Washington when it comes to war and peace for many years, what is it that leads these officials to continue with policies that they know are not working? Where is the pressure coming from? Who's benefiting? Who's profiting from all this?
it's very simple, and I'm sorry to have to say this. The pressure comes from each individual within the executive branch has one goal in life, and that's to make more money, to get promotions, and to gain more power. And every executive branch institution is committed to increasing its budget next year, so it has to find more people to spy on, more people to kill, more wars. You know, it's very interesting that President Obama came out, to his credit, came out on May 23rd calling for an end to U.S. perpetual war. 6 days before that, two executive branch officials from the Pentagon went up to Congress and called for perpetual war. And the reason they need perpetual war, they need to expand, because that's the only way they can get more budget, more money, more power, and advance in their careers.
So this is the old military-industrial complex, really, which most people don't see. In other words, when the reporting is done on all of this about the military, nobody really looks at who the contractors are, who's profiting from this, who's lobbying for these programs, the many members of Congress and others who leave Congress and go to work for these private companies and become representatives of it. In other words, there's a whole system here, this whole top secret America that you're referencing here, which is not really seen and yet is very influential in the way things are running. I did a series, Fred, called Who Rules America on this issue, going back to C. Wright Mills' analysis of the power elite. And the Free Speech TV is going to be running it on July 1st nationally on their channel. But, of course, CBS is not running it, or the people that I used to work for at ABC are not running it. So this is a challenge to all of us. What about your experience in terms of historically? Take us back to your Vietnam days. How have things changed since you began exposing the secret wars in Laos and Cambodia?
Well, before I answer that, I'm glad you're asking about that, because I do want to stress one point, and I can make it in the context of my experience in Laos, that it's very important to remember that we're talking about real human beings here who have names, who have faces, who have every right as much to live as we do, who are leaders snuff out their lives without a thought. And what I saw in Laos was... I went there as an education advisor. I interviewed refugees from communist zones, and I found out to my horror that the United States had been bombing these people for 5 years, driving them underground, burning grandmothers alive, burying children. In the refugee camps, I met Tal Vong, a 38-year-old man who had been blinded. I saw little children with napalm wounds on their bodies, and all of this was secret. Me living in Laos did not know about it. It had been going on 200 miles away, the most massive bombing in history. They dropped 2 million tons of bombs on Laos. They wiped out the Plain of Jars, a 700-year-old civilization. And even I, sitting in Laos, didn't know it, let alone Congress or the American people. That's when I encountered the vast power of the executive branch. And I have to say, today it's worse. That is, it's a more powerful, far more powerful institution because of 9-1-1. Since 2001, they've gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up these huge bureaucracies whose only business is killing people or surveilling people. And you know, the former head of the NSA goes to work for some private company and makes $1 million a year. It's a revolving door. Every single one of these officials is a great stake, not only in getting more money for their budget, for their own salaries, but being hired by the private sector when they leave.
So,
and it's much worse today than it was back then.
So is this deja vu all over again for you? I mean, is this, confronting?
I have to say I'm more horrified today than at any point in my lifetime, because I really I saw what secret executive branch officials are capable of, and I'll tell you one quick story that I think sums up the danger we're all in. When I was interviewing these refugees in the fall of 69, they all said that the worst bombing occurred beginning at the end of 68. And that between November 68 and the spring of 69, every single village on the Plain of Jars was destroyed. The planes came every hour. Dozens, hundreds of people were murdered, maimed, and so forth. And I couldn't figure out why on earth, when I was first heard this, why would there be this tremendous increase in the bombing? I knew Laos. I was friendly with American embassy officials. They were claiming the bombing was in response to a gigantic North Vietnamese offensive, but all of the U.S. embassy officials told me that it was a lie. There was no big offensive. Nothing had really happened. And I was, wondered. I mean, here I was feeling like I had discovered Auschwitz. Well, it was still going on because the bombing was still continuing in the rest of Laos when I found out about this. Some months later, there was a hearing on Capitol Hill, classified, of course. It was eventually released, and Senator Fulbright asked the deputy chief of mission, that's the number two to the U.S. ambassador in Laos, why did you increase all that bombing? And he said, well, President Johnson had halted the bombing of North Vietnam, and then this is an exact quote, and we had all those planes sitting around, and we couldn't just let them sit there.
This is funny, Fred, because I did some investigation about the bombing, the use of cluster weapons by Israel in Lebanon. And, there was a ceasefire, Israel and the Lebanese had come to a ceasefire. It looked like the war was over. And then suddenly the Israeli Air Force dumped all these cluster bombs, even, as peace was within reach, they agreed to have peace, okay? And when asked about it later, it turned out that apparently a new shipment had come in, and they had to clean out the warehouse. So they ended up dropping the bombs on people and killing people in order to clean up the warehouse. I mean, so, you have these institutional factors which are unbelievable often, we're going to talk a little more about it. Jeff Cohn is here in Woodstock, New York. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing?
Joining us. We're having little communications problems here. We're on the phone with Fred Branfman. You know Fred Branfman.
Yeah.
Who is in Budapest. And we're talking about the growing power of the executive branch. So we're going to have to take a break now. But when we come back, I'd like to go into this with both you, Jeff, and Fred, not only about the congressional response, but how this story is playing out in the media and how the American people are responding to it. We're being told that polls are showing that, Americans support all this spying and surveillance. And I've read counter reports as well. So I'd really like to get your take on all that. So we're going to be back in a minute on News Dissector Radio here on PRN-FM. Stay with us and join us. We're going to some music now.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no proxy. Oh, oh. I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Somebody's watching me. You bet.
I'm really feeling like
you. Bet somebody's watching you and watching us as well. I just would like to see more scrutiny of the station. Maybe we can get more listeners that way if more people were paying attention. Jeff Cohen, you've been involved with a really incredible effort by Grassroots Action. Tell us about that and the response you're getting of people who want to support this whistleblower.
Well, within a few hours of hearing about Ed Snowden, we put up a thank you petition on rootsaction.org, and it said simply, "We thank Edward Snowden for his principled and courageous actions as a whistleblower, informing the public about vast surveillance by the National Security Agency that undermines our civil liberties." That's the extent of the thank you note. And within the first day, we had 25,000 people signing that thank you note. Now we have about 40,000. And it's, you can look at those polls, which I think show a divided public, and I would argue those who are most informed about what Snowden has revealed and those who are most informed about the nature of the surveillance state are probably the ones showing up in polls saying, you know, this is not acceptable under our U.S. Constitution. And those who are least informed, are instinctively just saying, well, we got to protect against terrorists, so I support the surveillance.
At the same time, I mean, there does seem to be, I think this whole issue took Washington completely by surprise and the National Security, administration. Now they seem to be, after initially being fascinated by this guy, there seems to be a reaction setting in, particularly in the major newspapers, the punditocracy. All of them seem to be like putting him down. Have you noticed that? In other words, even though the story merits a lot of attention, Glenn Greenwald's efforts with The Guardian to get this story out, is very amazing. Now we have a member of Congress calling for Greenwald's arrest.
Yes. I think that initially mainstream media was sort of blown away by the nature of the leak and was taking it seriously. And then within a few hours, their natural instinct kicked in, which is to rally around the establishment. And as with Bradley Manning, as with WikiLeaks, the discussion has so much been about how do we punish this guy? What punishment does he deserve? You have even liberal columnists, commentators like Jeffrey Toobin in The New Yorker calling him a clown who should be put in prison. Brooks at The New York Times. You've got, obviously Fox News has gone nuts, but I've been watching MSNBC a lot. And even on MSNBC, there seems to be a sense that, Snowden's gone too far. He didn't work through channels. I mean, Congress has been over, there's two versions, there's two interpretations of the word oversight. One is you provide supervision and monitoring. The other is you look away. And I've seen a number of these columns that say, well, I sympathize with this young man, but he should have worked through channels. He should have gone through Congress. The reality is that Congress has been implicated in this. Remember, it was Congress that gave retroactive immunity to the phone companies. Anyone who thinks that a whistleblower is going to get some justice on the surveillance state, given the record of the U.S. Congress year after year after year for the last dozen years, is not being serious. So I think the mainstream media has largely been obsessing on how will this whistleblower be punished, rather than a debate about the seriousness of the disclosures. The same thing happened to Bradley Manning.
Don't these revelations, however, say a lot about what the media has not been covering? That this has to come to us from a newspaper in England? That this has to come to us from, by a blogger who is not working for a major mainstream press? In other words, in order to even get this information, the media system failed us totally.
I think it's Glenn Beck, of all people, who's coming out and cheering Snowden.
I think it's obviously going to have some strange bedfellows. The reality is that there has occasionally, off and on, been some coverage of these stories even before the leak. We just didn't have the actual documentation in our hands. I mean, James Risen in the New York Times wrote about some of this, the phone program, and Bamford, who's been on the beat of the National Security Agency for decades, has written a little bit about PRISM. It's, the point is that the mainstream media, even when they have covered these issues, serious issues of the surveillance state, it's sort of one-off coverage. And and the punditry doesn't pick it up, the commentariat doesn't pick it up, and the surveillance state has grown year after year after year. I think finally, because of Snowden, there is a big discussion going on this week. It's tremendous. The comedy people, you know, the people who host comedy shows, the late night shows are talking about it. I think it's this guy has done a very courageous thing.
Fred, when you exposed the secret bombing in Cambodia and the secret bombing in Laos, did you have a lot of media support for it?
Well, it's a very interesting story, and I want to add to what Jeff was just saying, that in addition to this kind of herd mentality, we have to remember the U.S. media's jobs depend upon their contacts in the executive branch. That's where they make their money. That's how they get promoted. That's how they get $150,000 a year to comment on a CNN. They may report what an Edward Snowden says for a while, but then their own interests kick in, and they can't identify with him because it's a threat to their own salaries and careers. And I had a very two dramatic examples of this in Laos. I used to work, part of when I first discovered the bombing, I would work with people like Ted Koppel of ABC News and Bernie Kalb of CBS News. I took them out to the refugee camps. Bernie Kalb did a special on Laos. He included the stories of how Henry Kissinger, who was at that point responsible for murdering these Laotian peasants, Ted Koppel actually teared up in the refugee camp. He was one of the few people who showed any emotion about it. Ted and I bonded. We spent a week together. I went back to Washington a few years later. At that point, Kalb was working, was the CBS guy at the State Department. Ted Koppel was the ABC guy at the State Department. Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State. I'm having lunch with Ted Koppel, and I said, Bernie Kalb had just come out with a completely obsequious book about Henry Kissinger, what a great guy he was. I looked in the index, not a word about Laos. In other words, nothing about Henry Kissinger's bombing of Laos or Cambodia. So I said to Ted Koppel, because we had bonded in Laos, I said, geez, can you believe that? That Bernie Kalb and Marvin Kalb with that book about Kissinger, he literally sat bolt up straight up and he said, I'll have you know that Marvin Kalb is a personal friend of mine, and so is Dr. Kissinger.
There you go. See, that's what happens when you start drinking the water, if you will, inside the Beltway.
No, but I want to stress this. It's not just drinking the water. If you're working for the State Department, you're assigned to ABC, the State Department, you depend on Henry Kissinger for news. You become the conduit for Henry Kissinger. You become, in effect, the part of the public relations that then gets Henry Kissinger the Nobel Prize and obliterates his mass murder in Cambodia and Laos. These people are doing it for money and for power, and that's how Washington works, and people should not delude themselves that anything else is going on.
Jeff, comment?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the media pretty closely for the last couple decades.
And I have survived somehow. Okay.
Yeah. So
mentally fit somehow. Okay, yeah.
I mean, what I see is, as Fred was saying, they get so close to their beats. You know, the people who cover the White House get close to the White House. The people at the Pentagon get close to those generals. The people at the State Department are very, very close with the State Department brass. And that's why sometimes they seem to be state journalists. You know, we're told over and over how great it is that we have a free press, unlike other countries where it's state-controlled. But I've been looking at some of the coverage in the wake of Ed Snowden's revelations, and you can tell that the original instinct of some of these reporters on CNN is what does this do for the state? Is this good for the state? And they talk about it as we. And, you know, I've heard reporters talk about, well, we could prosecute him for, as if they're members of the government.
Right,
and so it's really been revealing.
If I could add, let me like to just add another example that's very personal. Joe Klein, who's now a columnist for Time magazine, is actually a friend of mine. We were buddies. We saw the world the same way back when he was working for Rolling Stone in the Boston Phoenix. He then gets a job being a big-time columnist for Time magazine, and he brags in his columns that Richard Holbrooke got his son his first job and was his mentor in the State Department. That is, he brags about being best buds with Richard Holbrooke, a State Department official. Now, Joe goes to Afghanistan, and I've seen him often on national television. I'm just back from Afghanistan, you know, wearing a safari jacket, getting paid $150,000 a year by CNN to be a commentator. And he reports that General Petraeus, his greatest accomplishment is that he's turned the U.S. military into a learning institution. He's also best friends with General Petraeus and is always reporting whatever General Petraeus tells him to report. Joe does not point out that General Petraeus tripled airstrikes when he took over in Afghanistan, quadrupled assassins conducting night raids right out of World War II Gestapo movies, and that the hospitals of Afghanistan were overflowing after Petraeus took office. None of this information reaches the American people.
Guys, I'd like to share a little observation of mine, because as you know, I mean, as some people know, you know, I've done a lot covering South Africa, and of course, this was also the week where the Mandela rumors, the death watch in the media about Mandela, which apparently has now been relaxed because he seems to be doing better feeling better. But, you know, there were all these dire forecasts of his imminent departure, and I thought of the connection between Snowden and Mandela. Now listen to this. Both of them are heroes to different constituents. Mandela, a political revolutionary and liberator. Snowden, an information liberator and hero to people who have been trying to stop espionage and surveillance. But at the same time, there's a link between the two that has sort of been forgotten. Namely, Nelson Mandela was arrested in South Africa because of active surveillance by the CIA. The CIA monitored him, followed him, and then turned him in to the apartheid security branch of the South African government. And this was reported in the New York Times, it was reported by AP, it was reported in many places, but then it got forgotten. So in all the talk about Mandela, there's very little about how did he end up in prison in the first place and who sort of ratted him out. And it was, in fact, the CIA that did it. And it was the surveillance, not as sophisticated then as it is now, monitoring him and turning this information over to the apartheid state, which then prosecuted him. Now, before he was sentenced, given a life sentence, he was charged with treason. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because of the charges about Snowden, you know, that he committed treason. And there was a treason trial in South Africa that went on for 4 years with 156 defendants accused by the apartheid system of treason. Mandela was one of the kind of defendants, but also acting as a lawyer. And they were, you know, at that time, the trial was draconian, all white judges, all white everything. But nevertheless, the defense was able to challenge and question the government's case. Unlike today with the Manning trial and perhaps later with the Snowden trial, if there is a Snowden trial. But what happened was interesting is that at the end of the day, the government's case rested on the assessment of an expert on communism. Okay? And they would show him documents and say, here's a document from Nelson Mandela and the ANC. How would you assess it? Communist, communist. And another document. Communist. This is totally communist. And what about this document over here? Totally communist. And then the defense lawyer said, excuse me, could you read the name of the person who wrote that document? And it turned out to be the person who was the chief expert for the state. And when that was revealed, the judges dismissed all the charges and dropped the case. And Mandela was never convicted of treason. He was convicted later of sabotage. And he, you know, basically said, I'm prepared to die in the famous Rivonia trial. There's going to be a movie coming out in December called Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, that dramatizes all of these events. It will be worth seeing. But I'm just showing you that there is this surveillance has been going on for a long time, and we've had reports of it for a long time. Fred covered it during the Vietnam War, and you covered it certainly during the Iraq War, Jeff.
Yep.
But, you know, somehow it's sort of in one ear and out the other. There's no, like, memory bank in media.
Well, I think one thing that we would agree on is that the surveillance state is almost a requirement of a military state, that if you're going to constantly be engaging in these kinds of wars that become unpopular, you're going to have to watch the opposition. And our surveillance state has always grown at times of war. And it's important to remember that the National Security Agency, back in the 1960s, they had a watch list where they were intercepting the phone calls back in the 1960s of civil rights protesters and anti-Vietnam War protesters. So I think it's important that if you're going to declare a war on terrorism in 2011 and have this authorization of military force that's perpetual, that by definition, you know, along with the military-industrial complex, you're going to have this surveillance state and this surveillance complex where there's corporations like Booz Allen, which employed Snowden, and corporations like Stratfor. I mean, the reality is that 70% of the federal government's intelligence budgets go to these private contractors. So once you begin, you take these big steps upward into a warfare state, you're also going to be building alongside it a surveillance state, and that's what we've got.
And Booz Allen, paying Snowden $200,000 a year, he's like a high school dropout, but a very sharp computer expert. Nevertheless, you know, was getting 85% of all of its revenue from the government.
Yes.
So the government, these are government, state-run companies. These are not really private companies, but these are companies which subsidize a corporate elite. And I think the head of, you know, the guy who went become the head of Booz Allen was working for the NSA, et cetera, et cetera. They seem to be
right. And remember, this guy, the National Intelligence Director, Clapper, who went and misled or lied to Congress saying we don't collect these millions of, that guy was a former Booz Allen executive himself. But again, if people, Danny, want to decide that they're not on the side of the warfare state or the surveillance state, and they haven't yet signed the thank you note that we will be delivering to Mr. Snowden, they should go to rootsaction.org, and you'll see the statement at the top of the page, and just add your name to it and make a comment. And, you know, for all I know,
what are
Snowden,
some of the comments like that you are getting?
Oh, it's beautiful. There's thousands of comments now. You're a hero. I respect your bravery. Thank you for educating us. Thank you for, you know, it's really warm comment after comment. The comments are all visible if you go to rootsaction.org. So, I mean, we know Snowden is an internet whiz. And we know that he's hearing that, for example, Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat who heads the Senate Committee on Intelligence, is saying he committed an act of treason. We know he's hearing all of that news. We want to make sure through the internet that he's understanding that there's thousands and thousands and thousands of us who are on his side and want to defend him and want to protect him, and we respect his intelligence and we respect his bravery and we respect his commitment to the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, Daniel Ellsberg, who of course was one of the Pentagon Papers, leakers, along with Tony Russo, has praised Snowden. Says this is one of the most important leaks in American history. And not just the news story of the week, but a news story of the century, in a sense, in that we are finally getting revealed to us details of how our government has set up this sophisticated system. What's interesting about it, and I wanted your comment on this too, Jeff, was the attitude of the various internet companies, Facebook, Google, and the others, who have apparently been totally complicit with the government in all of this and are trying to back away from any association because, you know, here they are talking about defending the privacy of their customers on one hand, on the other hand, violating the privacy of their customers.
Yeah, I think it's been very embarrassing. It may turn out that they don't understand the project as having this name. I mean, I think we're going to get to the bottom of those corporate, you know, denials. But what we need is people in Congress, and this is why, frankly, Snowden had very little choice but to go to the, as you point out, Danny, independent journalists to get this out. But what we need is for Congress to hold hearings and find out what is happening, does this stuff mean, how should the American public be worried. But when you have a Democrat at the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee like Dianne Feinstein, who has been a complete proponent of the surveillance state, and is instead of trying to scrutinize and oversee the surveillance state, she wants to throw Snowden behind bars for life.
Even Al Franken.
That's the problem.
Even Al Franken has come out to prosecute
it's
him.
It's
astounding.
And Nancy Pelosi as well today. So, you know, here you have prominent Democrats because they don't want to be accused of being soft on terrorism or soft on leakers or soft, you know, on secrecy and all this sort of thing. They have to kind of preserve their hardline creds to be able to deal with the ultra-right. So they become like the ultra-right. And this is unfortunately what's happening. And because of congressional disclosure rules and all the rest of it, some of the congressmen who have tried to warn us about this have had to self-censor themselves and not reveal what they know.
Yeah, well, Senator Wyden and Senator Udall have been hinting about this project month after month after month. And finally, Snowden told us what they were hinting to us about. But again, do we have a government by representatives who we've elected, like Wyden and Udall, who wanted to bring this out to the public? Or do we have a national security state where even these two senators who thought it was outrageous, they were not allowed to talk, or they might have been, you know, sanctioned?
Right. Final thoughts from Fred Branthman in Budapest, Hungary, one of my heroes who I've been with and learned from back to the days of the Vietnam War, who was out front and helping us learn about various murderous projects that the government wanted to keep secret. Fred, your hopes at this period now, what's the best that can happen?
Well, I think we have to understand that we've reached a point in this country where most of the political power in this country lies in, and military power and police power lies in the hands of the executive branch. They operate in secrecy, they continually lie to the American people, and therefore they no longer represent the American people because the Constitution requires the informed consent of the public to what our leaders do. We have no moral obligation, we may have a legal obligation if we don't want to go to prison, we have no moral obligation to support them or to see us as their leaders. And the only hope of this country is that millions of Americans over the next decade will realize that they're losing their jobs, their infrastructure is deteriorating, their people are going hungry because not only of the 1%, which is the heart of the problem, but because of this permanent war state that's endangering their lives. And what we need is to run progressive people for the only hope would be that there'd be a mass movement that would elect decent people
Fred,
to Congress.
I've got to cut you off here because we're running out of time. RootsAction.org. Please check this out and get involved with this group because it's really attempting to really tell the truth about what's happening in this country. Thank you, Polarity One, for helping on this show. I know it's been hard to get a word in edgewise here with people as well informed as the two guests.
No, that's good. They've been depressing the hell out of me, and I've been listening.
So at any rate, we will have a podcast of the show up on both the PRN archives, but also on my blog at newsdissector.net tomorrow. So you can check that out and share it with others. It's been a very informative discussion. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector, editor of MediaChannel.org. Check that out as well. Please join us again here at the same time, same station next week on PRN FM. We're trying to get out the truth as best we can. Please help us do it. Thank you.